Welcome to the Artistic Foodies, the show that explores life through the lens of art and food. I'm Abbas Muhammad.
And I'm Irfan Raidan.
We're sitting down with Asad Ali Jafri, cultural producer and longtime Diwane Devan. Today, we're going to be talking about Devan, the very famous street in Chicago that has a lot of history, culture, and iconic food, including, nay, I say especially, the Nehari.
Asad Ali Jafri is an artist, cultural producer, and community organizer who uses a grassroots approach and global perspective in his work. Asad has over two decades of experience connecting artists and communities across imagined boundaries to create meaningful engagements and experiences.
I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for coming back to the show as a friend of the show. You know, we love it. We love engaging with you. I know you have a lot of stories. I mean, everything we talk about is related to American Muslim culture, just through the lens of art and food. And you are the OG cultural producer. So we always have a lot of these conversations outside of the podcast too. And it's always great having you back.
Glad to be here with you all. You all are doing great work and I'm glad to continue the conversation.
I know you probably already went over this in your first time on the podcast, but since I wasn't there that time, I think I was sleeping or something. But can you give just a little bit of background about yourself, like, you know, where you're from, what you're doing right now, and then we'll get into the questions.
For sure. My name is Asad Ali Jafri. I was born in Kuwait to South Asian parents. My mom was born in Karachi, Pakistan. My father was born in UP, India. And I was raised as a confused third culture kid in so many ways. But Chicago became home starting in 1990 because of the Gulf War. I've lived all over the world since then. I've worked as a cultural producer, an artist, an organizer, curator. Currently, I'm the executive director of the Kaleidoscope Dreams Foundation, which is based in New York City. So I'm living in New York. I miss Chicago, but New York is great, so I wouldn't exchange it at all.
So who has a better pizza, Chicago or New York?
I might have to answer that question off the record when nobody else is listening. I'm a convert to New York pizza as of recently. I used to hate on it all the time.
Okay, that's great. I like both myself. I like the deep dish, and then I also like the foldable, you know, skinny, thin pizza too.
It's all about the folding. For New York pizza, the folding makes the experience. You can't fold a Chicago deep dish.
You know what? The problem with the deep dish pizza is, like, it has to be an occasion and you can't do it all the time, right? It's like somebody's coming into town once in a long while. The New York pizza, it's like literally after this, I'm going to go outside. I'm going to walk one block. I'll get the New York pizza. It's going to be good. I know what I'm getting. You know what I'm saying? And I could do that every week and not get tired of it.
And it's a walkable food, too. You can have a slice of New York pizza in your hand as you're going to your next stop because, you know, New York is a very walking city. Try that with deep dish.
I appreciate the subtleties of the crust of the New York pizza now, you know? Who's using the sourdough? Who's using something else, you know? And then, and you know, you can just go on those levels and it's not just, it's different than Chicago.
Sourdough crust, yummy.
Yeah, you have to eat with the fork and spoon, the pizza. So I guess you can't be like Mom Dani and eat everything with your hands, right? But, so let's get into this now. So what kind of memories or community moments stand out from the era of the 1990s? And how did they shape your cultural or artistic identity?
You know, that's an interesting question. Early in the 1990s, we used to go to Devon quite a bit. And the reason we used to go to Devon is we were living in the Chicago suburbs. It was at least a 45-minute drive, maybe an hour drive. And you have to know that Devon is not easily accessible by highways, trains, even buses. It's not the greatest. It's just kind of this enclave in the city of Chicago that's not the easiest to get to. But South Asian families, Muslim families, other families would go there because they needed to get groceries that you couldn't find anywhere else. And for the Muslim community, they needed to get halal or zabiha meat. So my earliest memories are actually not great memories, because we would go there with my mom, who needed to do all the shopping. The family would be there, four kids, usually sitting in the car, trapped in the car, waiting until meat was brought, groceries were brought. And it was not fun because there was no parking. People drove like crazy. And you just had to kind of like park for a second while they did all the grocery shoppings. The other part of it that I didn't like is, since I was a little kid in Kuwait, I've hated the butcher shop. I've had traumatic memories of it. And going there on Divan brought back all those traumatic memories of like the animals hanging upside down and all the meat. And I didn't want to see it. So I had a really traumatic experience with being on Divan, forced to be there as a kid. However, when I became a teenager in like the mid to later 90s, Divan flipped in my head and became cool. And the reason it became cool is, at that point, when my older cousins in their 20s and their 30s would come and visit us in Chicago, we would go to Divan. And we were allowed to go with them to Divan even late at night. And that's when Divan came like alive. It was a magical place that I thought was open 24 hours. There was like food on the streets. You could get your meetup on. You could go walking with folks outside, like as if nothing else is happening in the world. And your parents, who were sitting at home, probably even sleeping, would be like, oh yeah, you're all good. You're with your cousins. You're going to Divan. It's like our place. So in a way, even though we didn't live right there at the time, Divan was like a home away from home.
Nice, nice. One quick follow-up. So I heard you're vegetarian. So is that a traumatic experience at the butcher shop? The traumatic experience at the butcher shop?
You don't get a lot of vegetarians on the shop. You got to represent.
Is that the reason that pushed you to vegetarianism?
I think that's where it started. I don't know if that was exclusively it, because I did eat meat after that, but I was always like questionable about the meat. I think my mom gave me like liver a couple of times and I felt I was tricked into it. My parents would eat things like brain and feet, mm-hmm. and things. No diss to them. It was just the thing that South Asians did. So all of that really grossed me out. But when I was a teenager, I was heavily into the martial arts, and I had a mentor who was also part of the Nation of Islam at the time. And he really lived by the how to eat to live methodology. And he would eat fish, but no other meat at all. And that's when, to me too, I was like, I need to be like him, because he was an excellent martial artist. And I never liked meat anyway to begin with. So I was like, this is easy. Instead of just like looking for the halal places, struggling at the school lunch, I was going to go to college and stuff. I was like, I just don't need to eat the meat. I don't like it anyway. Why bother? But then it really became like a healthy lifestyle type of thing for a long time. And honestly, like, I've just never liked the taste. So it's actually easy. People were like, do you miss it? And I was like, not really. And then since then, I've been either vegetarian, vegan, pescatarian at times, but like plant-based diet is my go-to.
What about the Sabri Nihari on Divan Street?
I've been a frequent visitor at Sabri Nihari, Ali's Nihari, Osmania, all of the restaurants, Anmol, and I'm the guy who sits there, who brings the musicians from India or Pakistan. I watch them eat everything they want while I'm eating my dal and my naan, and I'm happy. And they're just like, you must have hung out with a lot of Hindus, and that's why you're vegetarian. And I'm like, I'm not even going to get into it at this point.
It started with early childhood trauma, and then it became a healthy lifestyle. So you must be able to do a full rating of the top dals of Divan.
You know, I did have a spreadsheet, my wife and I, of like the best naan. Because it was like, it was not always the same. You would think that everybody can get naan down, but it's not the case.
Oh, yeah. Naan is very specialized.
Yeah. So who would you say is the top naan on Divan?
Oof, now you're putting me on the spot. But you know, the place that I really like is going to be off the thing a little bit. I would always go back to a place called Nepal House. They had really good naan, and they had really good dal, and they had a Nepalese dal, a Nepali dal specifically, with like, it's almost like a chana dal. Janiko dal that they make, and that would be my go-to.
So if you're looking for the best naan, check out Nepal House. Please sponsor us, Nepal House. And there's no competition, right? It's a non-issue, would you say?
Hey, for a long time we were a non-profit, and that's all we ate. So.
I love that. I'm so here for the dad jokes. So we explored a little bit about your relationship to Devon from an earlier age. I'm curious now. So I know you've been involved with the Space Shift Collective. I'd love to learn more about how that started and your role in it and how your relationship to Devon has developed through that project.
So like from the 90s when I was a teenager and thinking that Devon was such a cool place all of a sudden, from that point forward, I've obviously revisited Devon many, many times. At a point, you know, family members lived close to Devon. My parents, before I was born and they were in the States for a bit, were really close to Devon as well. But later down the line, I started going there and looking at it in a different way, right? It was a space for Muslim culture. It was a space for South Asian culture. There were concerts that were happening. There were secret events happening that people didn't know, underground happenings. Folks would get together there and do things that others in their community would be ashamed that they were doing, but they were definitely, you know, there to do that. It was a cultural hub in so many different ways. And I started seeing that in so many ways. And I have to credit my good friend Zeeshan B, a great singer and musician, because he sometime in the 2000 teens was like, we need to do more at Devon. Look at all these places like Lahore Grill. Look at these different kind of spaces that are just ripe for wanting to have something. Can we put up a concert here? Can we put up an open mic? It wasn't really happening at the time, except for one-offs, but he had put that little seed in my head. I then moved to a bunch of different places, and I came back from Honolulu during the pandemic in 2020, and I started working at the South Asia Institute. But I started looking at Devon again during the pandemic, and I saw a bunch of COVID clinics open up. Devon is a very transitionary space as well. And you would see businesses closing down, new businesses opening. But it also felt for the first time in my life more of like a ghost town because there was less people there. The pandemic was in full swing. And my wife, who is not from Chicago and had never been to Chicago before, was with me. And we were exploring with a curator friend of ours. And we kept on looking at these abandoned storefronts and said, you know what? What if we change this storefront into an art gallery? What if we change this storefront into a cultural center and a cultural space? There's so many mosques, there's temples, there's churches, there's gurdwaras on Devon, but are there hubs that are cultural hubs that don't have to exist for transactional purposes? I have to go in here to buy something. I have to go in here to shop. I have to go in here to pretend like I'm doing something so I can use the bathroom. Outside of that, like, where do you go and hang out? And the main place that people hang out is the street. So under that, guys, we had started this collective called Space Shift, and we were looking for new models of working within the arts that are not so traditional and that are not just solely in the nonprofit sector. And we thought, why not bring the arts back to Devon? Why not think about the way that culture can thrive on Devon? It really becomes a cultural hub. And we thought about where we could do that. We thought maybe we take over one of these abandoned spaces and have a pop-up art space, but that requires resources. And we landed at, why not just do it on the street? The street is like the meeting space. The street is the space where everybody's equal, really. Because on Devon, you'll see Hindus and Muslims, Indians and Pakistanis, Afghan, Rohingya, Nigerian, Assyrian folks, Jewish folks, all of these folks. But guess what? They're only interacting when they brush shoulders. They go to different restaurants sometimes. Even if they're at the same restaurant, you know, they may not be talking to each other. They're not coming together. They'll go to different bakeries, different stores to shop. So yeah, on the surface, it looks like everybody's there, but are people really coming together and celebrating the difference? Or are they just pretending like, hey, we're all alike and we live on this street? So the street was really the space that we decided that we were gonna take over and do what we do. And some of that was open mic nights on the street, a chai competition between people who's making the best chai, a game night where you have your carom board and your ludo and different things like that. Eventually we did so many of these that we had dance parties, concerts, just happening right on the street corner, usually with no permission asked except for the community and the business owners. And it became really, really successful to the point that we're still doing stuff 5 years later in a much more official way.
Very cool. Very cool stuff. So I heard about this thing called the Magic Table. When I first read it, I said, wait a second, are these a bunch of like some Sufi hippies sitting around smoking some hashish or something, you know, magic, eating some magic brownies? What's up? But I saw the video. It's pretty cool idea. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
For sure. One of our really good friends is Muhammad Ali. He is a visual artist and just a creative director from the UK, from Birmingham. The first time I met Muhammad was on Divan. He had come and he was going to paint for ICNA, the organization, a mural on their building that happens to be off Divan Avenue. At that time, as he was painting it, that mural got shut down and he never completed it. And the reason it got shut down is people complained to the alder person at the time and said he is painting something that's depicting the Twin Towers falling. He was absolutely not doing that. He would paint these great murals. Some of them had Arabic letters to them, but somebody who kind of had some hate in their mind thought this guy is coming here and doing something that's kind of messed up and got it shut down. That's an important part of this story because Muhammad then never got to complete his Divan project in that way. However, we met, we collaborated for many, many years. He came to Taken Into the Streets. We did so much together. I went over there as well. And when he heard that we were doing this work with Spaceshift and we were re-engaging Divan, he said he wanted to come back and do something. But he's evolved as an artist. And he was like, why don't we do something different that connects Chicago as a hub of South Asian communities, especially in Divan, and Birmingham, which is another hub of South Asian communities, especially in his case, Bangladeshi communities. And there's this connection between these communities. There's so many connections, but one of those connections is food. And how does food transform in these kind of hubs of immigrants that now have been there for generations? And so the idea was, could we have two groups of people having a meal together, except that one group is in Chicago, the other group is in Birmingham, and they're connected through a screen. So they're sitting at a long table, the table ends at a wall, and that wall has a screen, and then it continues in the other place. There were some challenges to that, of course. One is we'd have to be having lunch and they'd have to be having dinner so that we could get the timing right. The other was like, what are we going to eat? And we had a chef of Punjabi heritage in Chicago, Maryam Khan, and they had a chef of Bangladeshi heritage, Munayyam Khan, just happened to have the same last names. And they both made their own recipes. They both tried to replicate each other's recipes and then had stuff specific to each place. And we had this meal together that included the food, demonstrations, and then conversation across the cities. There's a short video of it. And it was truly a magical experience. We didn't call it the magic table at first. We called it something else. I can't even remember what it was called at that time. But after it happened, we were like, there's some magic going on here through the help of technology. And there's some connections being made. But it spoke back to this idea that Divan is a hub. It's a portal. It's a portal that crosses time, space, identities. And those kinds of portals exist in so many different cities across the world, such as Birmingham. And we wanted to make sure that what happens in Birmingham in specific neighborhoods correlates with what happens in neighborhoods like Divan in Chicago as well.
During the pandemic, the world came just a little closer as we stayed indoors and used technology to communicate with places we didn't normally have access to. We wanted to build on that and open a portal into another world, a window looking into each other's lives where distance was no object. While being thousands of miles apart, we wanted to learn from each other and explore our parallels, art, and stories around our heritage, food, and sense of belonging to the places we live. We attempted to create a magic table bridging the Atlantic Ocean, where our guests across two continents were brought together for an intimate meal and conversation with two guest chefs recreating each other's dishes in both locations.
Appreciate you sharing that story. And I remember also hearing about that story when it was happening. That must have been about a year ago, is that right? It was last summer?
It was exactly a year ago. Muhammad was with us as a visiting artist, our first visiting artist for Spaceshift. And it was just fascinating what he was able to do. We did some interesting work with photos of Divan as well. There's these historical photos of Divan in like the 80s, I believe, that a photographer named Mukul Roy, who's passed away since, did. They're phenomenal. They give you this insight to, I would say, like Divan's heyday at the time when really communities were all thriving there. And it's just like people having dinner, people at the grocery store working there, somebody behind the sweets counter making jalebi, for example. It was just like a real nice insight. And Muhammad was able to use some of those historical images as well as current images of both Birmingham and Chicago at this dinner.
It's amazing. And I really love that it was something that was centered around food. I feel like my experience of Devon is always centered around food. And of course, this is the artistic foodies. Now, you know, I don't want to offend your vegetarian sensibilities. However, I must go on this tangent of Nihari, which is one of my favorite foods. I think every culture has some form of a beef stew. And as someone who is ethnically 100% Punjabi, I have to say, there's nothing quite like a piping hot bowl of Nihari with a warm, buttery garlic naan. Oh my goodness. So I went on this quest recently to find out, because, you know, Sabri Nihari has all of this hype always. And always has been ever since I first started hearing about Devon. So I decided to find out what the best Nihari on Devon was. Now, I know Sabri Nihari is a classic, so I had to start there. I wouldn't say that I was underwhelmed, but I also wasn't overwhelmed. So if you're looking for just a whelming experience, I would say Sabri is the place to go. And then I tried Osmania, which was... Well, I don't like to talk bad or ill about food or any businesses. So we'll move on to the third one, which was Ali's Nihari and Barbecue. Now, Chef Ali, here's a little bit of history. He was at Sabri Nihari. He was the head cook, the main chef there. In fact, I saw some news coverage that I want to say is probably about 10 years old now, where a reporter went into the kitchen and talked to him about his charga. Now, his charga is legendary. And so, you know, on my last trip, I went to Ali's Nihari and I got Ali's Nali Nihari. And I didn't need to go to any other place on Devon after that. I have found my answer. I had found that which I was yearning for. I had dissolved in a complete falafel broth in that moment. And of course, having the charga chicken on the side is a big, big plus. So now it's definitely, I have to do this every time I go. And I remember one time I went during the dinner time, and there I see walking about and talking to the people on the tables, I see Ali himself. And I felt as though I was in some sort of a dream. I mean, a lot of people think about like, oh man, like I, you know, if I could meet my favorite artist or actor, it's like, oh, I saw Denzel Washington having brunch at this place. For me, it was just like that. He walked out of a dream and into the restaurant, and I got to take a picture of with him. And it's the most cheesiest picture. I really, truly felt like I was meeting a hero of mine. So my experience with Devon is always intertwined. And after that, you go for a little walk. You got to get your bond. You got to go to Hyderabad House, get your chai, and have the full experience, y'all. Like for me, I am a Devon of Devon.
I mean, Devon Diwane will continue to live and thrive because that is Devon's milieu, right? And I was living right off Devon. Because of this work, we moved right there to the neighborhood. And so I could get up and walk to Devon when I needed to. We did end up having a space shift, a temporary pop-up art space called Starlight, which was amazing. But that's probably for a different podcast episode. But in doing that, living there, working there, essentially having a pop-up art space, we were testing out all the chai, right? Like we needed to give people chai when they came for free, of course, because that was our ethos. Where do we get the best chai? Where do we get the best chai that'll be easily packable to go? Who will take our thermoses and fill it with chai for us, right? And when we come in there and are like, we need chai for 100 people, who's able to do that? But the interesting thing is different people will give you different answers. There's always a different shop opening up. Right now, there's so many pond places. But before, there was only two of them that you could go to, and people had their favorites. Sabri definitely had a time, but some people would argue that Sabri's already had its time, right? And Ali's is the place to go. And there's always something new happening on Devon, which is also like the exciting part of it, especially with food. Some of the new ones don't really last. Some of them end up being staples. The other interesting thing is new communities come to Devon. Devon has always been a hub for immigrants, refugees. So you do have the Rohingya Cultural Center, for example, and grocery stores and food places. You also have an Afghan community that is there that is newer than other communities there. And the Afghan community has bakeries. And now there's this thing of like Kabuli naan, Afghan naan that is happening on Devon too, which is excellent and tastes so good. And we're still waiting for like a straight up Afghan restaurant to open up there as well, which will happen, I think, anytime soon. So when this happens, like the communities keep changing. and they're overlaid. There's definitely that South Asian hub, but it's all these other communities that predate it, like the Assyrian and Jewish communities, and then newer communities like the Afghan community, for example, but also like East African communities and West African communities that are there because of the Muslimness. It's all just really great, and it all comes out in the food. I don't know if it's open again, but there used to be a place right across from Osmania called Alif Cafe, which was excellent because it was a mix of like Uyghur and Kyrgyz food. Why was it there? It kind of makes sense to us if we understand, again, how that complements the other food that you're having. And of course, if you're living close to Divan or you come there once a month, you want to try different stuff, right? So it's great to get some lagman at one point and then go back to your nehari the next time you come.
Very cool. So I have an interesting question. Is it pronounced Devon Street or Divan Street?
You know, South Asians have made it into Divan Street, and everybody will call it that at this point.
Yeah,
I might have been Devon at some point, but I don't know if it is anymore.
Yeah, because when I first went there, you know, this was like at an ISNA conference a long time ago. Everyone was talking about Divan Street, and then when I saw it, I said, what? This is Devon. I don't know what people are talking about.
That's how you know how it's so kind of, you know, Desified, if we can say that.
yeah. So speaking of people who are not South Asian, not Desi, not Muslim, what are some things about Divan Street or Devon Street, Devon Avenue, that you think people need to know more about or understand more about?
You know, it's a place that changes by the hour. So it's like, if you really want to know Divan, you got to be there in the morning, right? When people are just getting to work there at the shops and the stores and what that vibe is like. Some of the aunties and uncles are getting their groceries at that time to avoid the crowds. You definitely got to go there on a weekend, Saturday or Sunday, where people are coming from Indiana and Detroit and Wisconsin, just to kind of come to Divan. And then you got to make sure you go there at 2 a.m. at some point on a random day. And you're like, why is this 2-year-old kid running around in the middle of Chicago at 2 a.m? And you realize it's because it's Divan. It's just, it exists in its own microcosm that isn't like other places. I do also want to say, to complicate things, Divan is a complex place and it's got its issues and challenges, right? It's got its issues between Hindus and Muslims, right? It's got its issues between Indians and Pakistanis as well. It's got its issues between Muslims and Jews. It's got its issues between class, people who live and work there, and people who just come and visit from the suburbs, right? It's got its issues in caste, which is something that we focused on for one of our projects, race, caste, and colorism. There's all of these complexities, and most people don't want to engage with that, especially people of privilege. But we as Spaceship dig into that and think about, why is that, right? Are we creating the problems that exist in different parts of the world and creating them here as well? Or is there a way for us to solve some of those? And that's been exciting. And we do it in a way that's fun and brings joy. But I think people need to know all of that in the neighborhood, that it's complex while being really fun and while being really chaotic. And if you're a guest at Divan, don't drive there unless you want to get into an accident. Try to get dropped off if you can, because the parking and the driving is also pretty insane.
This is definitely true. And it's like, no matter what time of the night too, I've been there late at night and it's been wild. It's been, gotta be careful not to get hit in the middle of the street. That's for sure. I've seen some close calls. It's wild. I mean, it's almost like stepping into a different village, with its own, you know, its own vibe and its own setting. It doesn't feel at all like the rest of Chicago. And I think just in general, one of the things that I love about Chicago is that each neighborhood has its own cultural identity. You know, going down to Pilsen, for example, that's where you're going to get the best Latin food. And I remember just exploring that and happening by chance upon a Puerto Rican music and food festival. And that kind of stuff is always happening, especially in the summer in Chicago. So Chicago is a lot of fun. You know, I've gone there a few times, and that's one of those places I love going back to.
It's exciting. It's exciting in that way. I mean, you have your cultural enclaves. You also have, like, you know, Chicago being a city of neighborhoods, being a city of blocks. Everything is kind of different. And Divan is also like that. This summer, which I can't be there for, our collective has launched our newest project. It's launching this Saturday. It's called Munni Market, as in a small little market. And it's a night market vibe. So there's a bunch of performances. But for the first time, we're doing stuff at night or into the evening instead of like during the daytime. Just to embrace, because Devon is also like a nightlife place. And Chicago, unlike New York, is not a 24-hour city. Like you go to certain neighborhoods in Chicago and stuff is definitely shut down at a certain time. But you go to Devon, like you said, at any time, and it can be thriving.
And so I love that so much. And speaking of nightlife, we get to the part of this interview where we get to talk about some of the more wild stories of Devon. I've heard a lot of stuff. I've read some stuff. To me, it's rumors. You've lived there, and I'm very curious to know. I've heard, for instance, Salman Khan stopping by Sabri Nahari every time he travels through Chicago, and there's footage of this out there on YouTube if anyone wants to look at it. I've heard stories of bodies being found on top of Tahura's suites. I've heard of 70-year-old uncle running a halal pizza shop, which is also a front for smuggling tens of thousands of kilos of some apparently very good heroin. It must have been great, otherwise he wouldn't have so many repeat customers. But I've heard a lot of these stories. I don't know what's true, what's not true. I found some official DA documents, so I assume there's something going on. I'd love to hear from you as a resident. What are some things you witnessed, you experienced, or you heard through the grapevine?
That's a really good question, and definitely puts me on the spot to start to think of stuff. I mean, I think I don't doubt any of those stories because Devon is one of those places where if you can imagine it, it can happen there. I don't know if I have any particular ones like that, and I'm not an expert academically on Devon and its history. I'm just a lived experience person there, and I don't live there any longer. But I definitely know that there was a lot of kind of like nightclub type of vibes within the South Asian community in Devon for a long time, and specific places that you could go for that. I know that I definitely tried to go to the Bombay Hall once, which you don't know is there because it's on like a second level. And the bouncers definitely kicked us out from going in there. I know, Abbas, you've been there for one of the, like the underground Qawwalis before with a horrible sound system because you were there with me. I definitely know that there is a mosque there that is known colloquially as the Fight Club Masjid. So you take that.
The Fight Club Masjid.
I won't say which one or anything like that.
Wow.
There's definitely like brawls that have happened in Devon, like straight up brawls and fights amongst people over probably, to be honest, some kind of politics within one country, not even like in between the others. I used to hear stories in the 2000s about a South Asian gang that was on Devon as well. And I can't remember if they were called the Devon Boys because there was another gang called the Devon Boys back in the day that was not South Asian as well. But there was definitely like almost like a wannabe street organization on Devon that was running for a while too. That was really, really interesting. I don't know about the smuggling and the dead bodies, but I am not surprised at that. Every once in a while you would hear something crazy and be like, wait, did that really happen on Devon? And you would be like, yeah, I kind of did.
It's wild because the Tahura Suites, I've been there, they have great kulfi, and I never would have imagined anything like this happening, but I suppose it's anything is possible on the magical Devon.
I want to know more about it. I mean, there's so many characters there. There's magical stuff that happens on Devon. I've seen people meet that met in like Gujarat and like would come to our space and just be like, I saw you at a protest in like Ahmedabad when I was there or something, and then be like,
wow.
And we're sitting here playing carom board, and I'm like, how in the world is that happening? I know that our friend who passed away, Ifti Nasim, who was a great poet and like a pioneer in the LGBTQ community, did a lot of work in starting a new organization for South Asians on Devon as well, or connected to Devon. And so like anything you can think of really kind of ends up happening on Devon because it is that hub. And when you have a hub of South Asians, like all of the things happen there, right?
Yeah, we are pretty wild people. That's amazing. And I'm wondering if also one of the gangs that you were talking about is related to the Black Pea Stones, who were a Chicago organization and had Muslim ties as well. So, you know, with Muslim roots, is this something that you're familiar with or that you can talk on?
Of course, the Black Peacestone Nation is obviously one of the famous kind of street organizations in Chicago whose membership does connect directly to Muslims. I wouldn't say that's related to Devon necessarily. They exist in certain communities in Chicago. And when I used to work at Iman on the southwest side of Chicago, you got a lot of respect for being a Muslim organization or a Muslim, because any member who's a true member of the Black Peacestone Nation should be able to recite, for example, the Fatiha to you, you know, will also like observe a certain diet, for example. So those things are really kind of rooted in Chicago's core street organization culture. But I don't know if that's necessarily a direct Devon connection. I'm sure people would connect in that way. But there's also a lot of kind of racism within the South Asian community, unfortunately, to this day. And I think because Chicago is a segregated city, that comes out a lot within Devon, too, to be honest.
Asadbhai, really, really appreciate having you on here. Are there any last thoughts or stories or reflections that you have for people who have not experienced Devon yet that you would want them to know before they come and check out Devon in Chicago?
I think one of the best parts of Devon, because it is an example, I think it's one of the few examples that still exists of a street in the middle of the city that's totally walkable and is easy to walk on, right? Because I think you have these hubs in other cities, but like you have to go from car to car, or it becomes like this kind of suburban enclave. Devon is right in the heart of the city in some ways, right? So experience that. And I would say a good time to experience it, if you can figure out the moon sighting correctly, is Chand Raat. So the night where people are looking for the moon before the holiday of Eid, because that is like almost like this wild Muslim time on Devon Avenue. And it's like everybody's competing for attention. It's kind of crazy. Somebody might be waiting to get mehndi or henna on their hands for like 3 hours because it's just not organized well. Somebody else might have like this huge boombox outside of the store that's blasting music that just sounds horrible because it's too loud for anybody to hear, but it's just right there. And like you see kids out to like, you know, 2, 3, 4 in the morning, just having a really good time. And I think that's just a different experience that you don't get in a lot of places in the US.
Mm. That sounds like such a vibe. I hope I get to experience that. I hope to make the pilgrimage out during that time.
Inshallah.
And now, a word from our sponsors. Craving real halal Chinese food? Visit Li Zhao Halal Chinese Restaurant, the only Hafsa-certified hand-slaughtered halal Chinese restaurant in the Bay Area. Their new special, Xian Chinese-style ramen, is a hand-pulled noodle dish with a rich broth and your choice of flavorful chicken, beef, or fish. Customize your noodle thickness for a flavor-packed experience, and be sure to check out the rest of the menu too. Li Zhao is located in Union City and is taking reservations today at 510-431-3211. Li Zhao, authentic, halal, and local. Check us out. And now, back to the show. So in this next segment over here, we get to explore a few of the stories that most people might not know immediately about the history of Devon and the history of Chicago as well. There are a couple of stories that we dug up that seemed really far-fetched and very far removed from our memories of Nihari and Chai and cultural activities on Devon. There's some interesting stories. Irfan, what kind of stories did you dig up when you were looking into this?
Well, when I was doing my research, I found an interesting story, which we had briefly mentioned earlier in the podcast, about a murder that occurred on top of the famous Tahura Suites in Chicago. Now, that is one of the must stops whenever someone visits Devon in Chicago. And of course, I've been there a couple of times myself. And I was very shocked to hear about this and very sad news. I believe this was in 2023. There was.
Man, I was in Chicago in 20. I'm pretty sure I got a kulfi from Tahura Sweets in 2023. That's crazy. Oh, man.
Yeah, well, this might have happened the same time you were there. Unfortunately, he was found murdered in the rooftop of Tahura Sweets in Chicago. And the suspect was found to have stabbed him on the roof while he was fixing the, I guess, the AC unit or something on the rooftop. And they found his body stabbed to death. And then the suspect, I don't know if I should mention the suspect's name or not, but he was charged with murder and robbery. And then when they police did their investigation, they went to his house and they found another body of someone stuffed in the refrigerator in this guy's house. Man. And that was looks like another Indian Pakistani person, or actually no, sorry, it was a Bosnian Muslim person who was killed. His name was Rasim Katanik, who was 69 years old, and his body was found in the home refrigerator of this suspect. So pretty crazy stuff.
That's really morbid.
Very sad to hear that. But yeah, that's some crazy stuff that's happened at Tahura Sweets. So next time you go there, just make sure you look around, be careful.
Yeah, and next time you're there, read a Fatiha for those that were lost to this crazy madman. I mean, it really kind of just goes to show, especially something so tragic and morbid like this, that it's just crazy. People are everywhere. I never would have expected this from, I mean, this is a place I've like hung out with family and friends. So it just, this one really hits home, There's another story that I found, and this is perhaps more also history of Chicago overall. It's really interesting. There's this gang that was founded in Chicago in the late 1950s called the Almighty Black Peacestone Nation. This was founded in Chicago, and at one point they were considered by law enforcement authorities to be Chicago's most powerful and most sophisticated street gang. And it kind of started, I believe, as like a boys and girls club or like a community organization that then went into drug trafficking, extortion, murder, the usual kind of street gang kind of stuff. But, there's something really interesting and extraordinary about this gang. Otherwise, we wouldn't really be talking about it with this great interest. And that is that in the late 60s, the focus of the gang started to become a lot more towards Black nationalism. And so now the gang is really fighting for the Black nationalist movement. And it became also a lot more associated with Islam in very interesting ways. So the first change happened when a faction of the Black Peacestone Nation adopted the Moorish Science Temple faith, which was sort of founded by Noble Drew Ali and still exists in many places, in many cities across the U.S. today. And so they became known as the El Rukn tribe of the Moorish Science Temple of America. A little while later, they started to actually align themselves with Sunni Islam, mainstream Sunni Islam. And the gang was now called Al Rukn Sunni Masjid Al Malik. So it's really interesting to see that it became very political. I believe a lot of the gang activities still continued, but the leaders themselves took a very political and philosophical role here, and also just sort of aligned themselves as Muslims, which is very interesting because through this Black nationalism and this identity change, they actually grabbed the attention of the leader of the Nation of Islam, who at this time was Minister Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam. And Minister Farrakhan actually introduced the leaders of this gang to Libyan ruler Muammar al-Gaddafi. Yeah, I bet you weren't expecting Gaddafi's name to be in this story.
Nope.
Ultimately,
you know, with their nationalist, black nationalist movement, and being connected to someone like Gaddafi, they chose to try and further their cause and ultimately were arrested on terrorism charges for trying to help Libya carry out attacks on U.S. soil. So it's so wild. You have the Chicago gang, you got the street gang, regular street gang stuff, you know, the drugs, the money, the kidnapping, you know, you're kind of like your cookie cutter, you know, gang starter kit. And then after that, you have this whole like Muslim identity, the black nationalist movement, and then ultimately getting wrapped up in terrorism plots linked to Gaddafi. I mean, I've never heard of a gang like this. And I bring this up, you know, in the Devon episode, just to mention that, you know, the gang was active on a pretty large scale. I mean, I think even they were out in LA, they were out in Dallas, Texas. It was a very, very wide reach. And so, of course, Devon being in Chicago actually had a small faction of gang members, out of which what I've heard is this included Pakistani youth as well. Now, it's interesting because of the Muslim affiliation of the gang and the widespread sort of political movement, which it was a lot harder to argue with the political movement. It's a lot easier to just write something off as a violent gang. But it's interesting to see Muslim Pakistani youth at the time were also involved with the gang. So it's not too far-fetched to imagine some sort of activities, although I haven't been able to find specific instances. But in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, it's not too far-fetched to think about what kind of activities the Peacetown gang members were up to in Devon, especially the Pakistani Muslim ones. And I think that's absolutely fascinating. If anyone does have any stories about this, please do come forward.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting stuff. Speaking of gangs, more recently, I came across there's not on Devon, but in Chicago on the South Side, there's this famous area known as the O Block, which is a nickname of a neighborhood in Southside Chicago. And it's known for its gangs, you know, young African-American street violence and poor neighborhood. And the past few years, actually, I think the past 5 years or so, there's been a surge of people converting to Islam. So now this area, which was once known for, you know, gangs and gun violence and drugs, is starting to slowly change and become like a more of a Muslim neighborhood, where a lot of people are actually converting to Islam. And now there's mosques there. There's people who are, you know, trying to raise families there, and they're cleaning up the neighborhood. So I think that's like a very positive story of how Islam is, changing the area for the better, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot, I know this isn't the focus of this episode, but I'd love to just mention this. There's a lot of interesting interesting stories and threads across American Muslim history. And of course, such a big part of that is the Nation of Islam. And when I was in Chicago a couple years back, I got to visit what is essentially their headquarters in Chicago. It's called Masjid Maryam. And this was their second ever location as the Nation of Islam. Is a very historic location. It's a very beautiful, stunning building. It's amazing. You know, definitely check it out if you can. And then across the street from there, you get to eat some of the best bean pies, some of the best. Just across the street from there, you'll be able to try some of the best bean pies that you've ever tasted.
Yeah, bean pies are good.
I love bean pies, and I love history, and I love food. And to be honest, I love Chicago. And so I'm really glad we got to shed some light on some interesting stories. And I hope this piqued your curiosity. And please do check it out and let us know which of the spots
as your favorite Nahari.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Artistic Foodies. Before we go, show some love for your favorite podcast by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Be sure to find us on Facebook and Instagram to stay tuned for more episodes as well as bonus content. You can also have access to all of our episodes at theartisticfoodies.com.
This podcast has been brought to you by Halal Fest Incorporated and Gamma, Gathering All Muslim Artists.